The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. John Gibbons joins us for our weekly Environment Spot. And John, can I put it to you that the environmental agenda when it comes to politics is being lost, even in Ireland, not just across Europe. The Greens have definitely lost one MEP seat, Ciarán Cough. Grace O'Sullivan is not going to retain her seat in Ireland South. And even in local councils, while many of their seats were retained in Dublin, the likes of Galway has wiped out the Greens, Waterford. There's big change coming, but it ain't going to be influenced by Green Party politics, it would seem.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. Absolutely. I think overall, right across Europe, it's been a tough few days for Green voters and for Green parties. I mean, if right across Europe, the data that we have so far is that the Greens across Europe started out with 71 seats. Now that's down to 53. So that's a loss of 18, including the two that are lost in Ireland. It's a very mixed picture, Matt. It's difficult to figure out what's going on. For example, Holland was the epicentre of the farm protests, for example, right? So you would think there'd be a big backlash against the Greens arising from that. That would make sense. But in fact, in Holland, the Green Left coalition narrowly beat the far right into first place in Holland. In Denmark, for example, Green MEPs went from 2 to 3, and in Sweden they held their 3. So the picture across Europe is quite mixed. Germany, for example, they took a shellacking. And interestingly, exit polls in Germany established that the people who had voted Green in 2019, they didn't switch votes this time, they just didn't vote.
Okay, but I'm going to give you a concrete example, so to speak, because Galway gets rid of all of its local councillors. The big issue for many people in Galway is the outer ring road. So maybe the Green Party, if it wants to be successful in getting people to agree to many of the measures it wants to implement, has to give ground on things like that, which are directly relevant to the quality of people's daily lives.
I think that's a really interesting argument. You look at Galway. It's an utter mess. And Galway has attempted to solve its intractable traffic problems over the years, Matt, by adding more and more roadway. Adding the ring roads around Galway are choked up. The latest plan is another billion euros on another ring road. Now, the question with this is this addressing the critical problem, which is the lack of good quality public transport to ease traffic congestion? But the issue really is that Galway politicians, and obviously in this case we're talking specifically the Greens, who went up and said, look, we can't build our way out of this crisis, are up against politicians who take the populist view that says, no, everybody loves roads, build more roads, and also misleading, I would suggest, the public in telling them that we can actually resolve traffic problems by simply laying on more and more roads. This does not work. I've even heard one particularly idiotic notion among many, I should say, in recent days. One of the MEP candidates wanted to build an orbital motorway outside the M50, Matt, just in case the M50...
Well, that's not the first time I've heard that suggested.
No, it isn't, but it's completely bananas.
Why?
I mean...
See, hang on a second, because even if you talk, the M50, just like the ring road in Galway, is now filling up. Hmm. So if you have another road running... Well, not quite in parallel, given that it's a ring road, but you get the point I make. Either around by the M50 or in Galway, you reduce the pressure on the inner roads and people can use the outer roads instead.
That's the theory, but it's countermanded by another theory called induced demand, simply known as build it and they will use it. So, for example, when we built the M50, the initial effect of that was a freeing up of traffic. But guess what it did? It induced traffic demand.
Can you imagine if we didn't have the M50? Can you imagine the mess we'd be in if we didn't have the M50?
Well,
because recently, unfortunately, there was a tragic accident which a person, most cyclists, lost his life, but a good section of the M50 was shut down, one section, and everything came to a halt, not just on the M50, but all of the arterial roads around Dublin. People were stuck in traffic for ages, and that would be the way we'd have it every day if we didn't have the M50.
I think you've answered your own question there, right? What you're giving me there is a textbook example of what happens when traffic begets more traffic and we become so locked into that system. I'll give you a different scenario. Imagine if instead of all the billions that we've poured into road building in recent years, imagine if we'd spent even 30% of that on building high quality public transport networks that really worked, that really connected people and places up. Imagine if we'd done that. Then you don't have the problem of finite road space, Matt. I mean, Irish population, as you know, has increased by, what, 1.2 million over the last 20 years. That has put huge pressure on all kinds of things. And it means, for example, that we can't road build our way out of this. We can't simply say we've got an extra million people in Ireland. Well, that means an extra 700,000 cars. We don't have, there isn't enough road that you can build to deal with that. The only solution, and we see this time and time again, especially across European capitals, they realise you reach peak car and the only way forward for the public, and I stress this, the public, is to find the most efficient way of getting people around, and that is public transport.
Yeah, but hold on. Let me give you an example from recently, a journey I had to take. I went to Cork recently via Limerick. I had a job to do in Limerick in the morning, so I took the 8 o'clock train out of Dublin, went to Limerick, did what I had to do in Limerick, and then travelled from Limerick to Cork by train. So I got on a train at 5 to 1, and I got into Cork at 25 to 3, because I went via Limerick Junction, 1 hour and 40 minutes. If I'd been driving, I'd have done that in about an hour, even despite the fact that the road is so crap between Limerick and Cork and should be improved. Now, I was happy enough because I had my laptop with me, there was plenty of work I could do, but I'm sure there's lots of other people who would say, well, actually, I don't want to be spending that time. And actually, when you think about it, that's train station to train station, not door to door.
Sure. I think equally you could say that what you've just offered there is the perfect reason to have a better quality, more direct train link, say, for example, between cities like Cork and Limerick. What we really need, Matt, here is better quality, interconnected, joined up, whether it's joined up cycle lanes in our cities, whether it's joined up public transport networks. When you've got transport networks that have got holes in them and they've got sticking points, then the public's use of them is frustrating and they tend to be underutilized. So it's bad value for everybody. When you join those networks together, you get the network effect and overall people are vastly happier. And as you say, you may have spent a little more time on the train, but it's productive time. You're not going to have the laptop up on, I hope, on the steering wheel in front of you as you're driving from Limerick to Cork.
No,
exactly. So you can actually use your time. You get your time back because we are throwing away millions of hours of people's lives, Matt, sitting in traffic jams. And for example, we know that Dublin, which is still, by European standards, a small city, has among the worst traffic congestion, not just in Europe, Matt, but in the world.
But is it the case, though, that maybe the Green Party is shooting itself in the foot when it comes to elections, and this is particularly with the forthcoming general election in mind, by having what Danny McConnell, the editor of the Business Post, described on this programme yesterday as an ideological stance on issues? You know, it is the third leg of the government. It's the smallest leg. It has the least number of seats. And yet people perceive it to be trying to dictate government policy, perhaps out of step with the level of support that it has.
I think that's an interesting point, and probably the term, and I heard him use the phrase yesterday, the term ideological. I would suggest swapping that term with another term, that it is a policy-led party. I mean, the Greens are a little bit different from some of the other parties in that they're going into power isn't about going into power. It's about achieving certain results, particularly on the climate agenda. And for example, the Green Party went into government back in 2007 to 2011, and they lost all their TDs at the end of that. It was a complete wipeout. Yet some of their legacy, by the way, in things like building standards today in Ireland live on. So that's really the point, almost a kamikaze party, if you like, where they go in to get things done, knowing, by the way, that it's not popular. It leaves them wide open to people like Regina Doherty having cheap shots about the Berlin Wall. Imagine comparing bike lanes to the Berlin Wall as if it's splitting Dublin up.
It worked first. She got a big vote and got elected.
She got a big vote.
And the Greens didn't get elected.
Absolutely. But I guess the point, I suppose, about Green politics, and again, I'm not here to bat for any particular party, but let's say Green politics with a small G, Matt. The point about them is they can't wait for the electoral cycle. We're working against a climate agenda, against a biodiversity agenda that will not wait while other parties sort of sit on their finger for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So I think that's why you get what Danny called this ideological urgency. The sense that we need to get stuff done and we can't afford, even by the way, if it means electoral defeat, we can't afford to simply cut corners, take the easy road and say, oh, well, sure, for the sake of popularity, we'll do this, we'll say anything to get elected. I think we need some people in politics, Matt, who are actually in it to make a difference.
One listener says to me, Limerick to Cork by road in an hour, not a hope. Sorry, I think you're actually right, listener, because the road is so poor and so dangerous that you couldn't do it in an hour. No, if you had a motorway between the two cities, you'd probably do it in an hour. North Cork is where I want to turn to next, John, because there has been a major fish kill. And as many people are pointing out, don't try and blame this one on the farmers. It was dreadful to look at it on the television the other night. Actually, really disgusting to look at all of the 5,000 dead fish floating in the water near Kanturk on the River Aloe. And this was not down to farmers and effluent. This is down to Irish Water itself.
That's right, Matt. In fact, I was looking back over the record in this, and as of last November, the EPA had prosecuted Uisce Éireann 28 times over water pollution incidents. So clearly we have a problem with Uisce Éireann and its role in water pollution. Clearly it's there to produce a safer water system, but clearly that's not working terribly well. Now, the first thing to say about it is that the fines that they're getting are really kind of small. And the second thing people would say, well, if you fine, you know, Uisce Éireann €500,000 for this, it probably just simply gets paid out of the taxpayers' funds in the first place. So maybe it might be a better idea to link, for example, bonuses or salaries at the top level in these type of organisations to their performance on water
pollution. Yeah, but hang on, why is it happening? Why would Irish Water be responsible for this?
Well, they're involved, among other things, in water treatment facilities. Now, water treatment facilities use concentrated chemicals, which have to be managed to clean the water in particular ways. And what appears, and I stress appears, to have happened in this case, that some of those concentrated chemicals got directly into the waterways, and they're never meant to get directly into the waterways. In the same way, Matt, that your local swimming pool has a tiny amount of chlorine as a disinfectant. But if you dumped a big load of chlorine into a river, you'd have a fish kill, because it's a toxic chemical, but it has to be, it is a water purification method, but it has to be used in extremely precise ways. Now, I'm not suggesting that chlorine was the active agent here. I don't know at this stage, but that's to give you an example, because Irish Water are using chemicals to treat the water to make it safe for us to drink, because, of course, the water that we drink, we need to filter out many of the toxins in that water, including, for example, high levels of phosphorus, high levels of nitrates. So our water, we want it to be safe to drink, but by and large, you cannot drink. You couldn't go along to a river or stream in Ireland, put in your keep cup, take out some water and drink it. You would probably end up being poisoned. So unfortunately, for human consumption, we need to treat all of our water. But it is important to stress, and I think the focus today, and rightly so, is on Irish Water. But I will quote the EPA here in saying that agricultural runoffs are the number one pressure on waterways in Ireland. They've identified over 1,000 rivers, lakes and streams where the number one pressure on them is nitrate pollution. And I'll explain this, Matt, ever so briefly, really, really briefly. Because of livestock being in fields all over the country, their runoff, their slurry, their sewage makes its ways into the waterway, and it's very difficult to control that. Whereas at least with water treatment facilities, you have a centralised point and you have the opportunity to actually intervene. So we have pressures, we have to deal with them all, and we should keep the focus right across the board.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.